Blog Talk Radio.
Are you excited? I know I'm excited. This is ScaryCast, the craziest hour and a half in all of internet radio, right on iHeartRadio. This is Dr. John Stamey. So glad to be here with you tonight. I have been looking forward to this all week just because it's been a crazy week and I wanted to have a good time. I want to introduce my co-host, one of the best friends I've ever had. She's crazy cool. Robin McCray. Robin, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. Looking forward to another show. Glad to be here.
That's good. We're so glad to have you. And tonight, we want to introduce our guest. Now, so that everybody knows, one of my best friends in the world is the executive director of Eno River Media in Raleigh, North Carolina. And his name is Anthony Dowling. Anthony has been one of my best friends for a long, long time. And he talked to me about 4 weeks ago. He said, John, I've got this guy that you have got to interview. And his name is Jeremiah. And so I'm going to introduce you to him as soon as I'm on your show and see what you think. And so last night we had Jeremiah on Pop Culture Stars, and he was great. He was a lot of fun. He put up with everything that Dave Atwell, Todd Saxon, and I threw at him. All I got to say is anybody that's that good of a guy. And then I called him up after the show. I said, you're going to be on ScaryCast. I didn't even ask him. I just said, you're going to be on ScaryCast tomorrow night with, right? And he said, well, sure. So anyway, I want to introduce everybody.
He's a team
Jeremiah. Oh, he's a great team player. He's a lot of fun. And he's from Raleigh, North Carolina, one of my favorite towns because I graduated from NC State. So, Jeremiah, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Just relaxing at home and getting ready to put up with anything that you throw at me tonight.
Actually, you'll probably throw some things at us, so that'll be okay. Well, you got the A-team here. Devin is on special assignment. He's actually at a Chamber of Commerce ribbon cutting and is in charge of it, so we have allowed him to be on special assignment tonight, but we're glad to have you here with us. And so, when we were talking last night after Pop Culture Stars, you were telling me about this house. You said it was possessed, and I said, oh, so it was haunted, and you said, no, it was possessed. So for our first segment tonight, would you tell us about it? And now, by the way, Robin is a well-known proponent of MindSpeak. She can pick up vibes. She's our resident psychic. I'm our secondary resident psychic. And Robin may have a comment or two. But start telling us about the house you lived in. Tell us the city. Tell us just a little bit about what the house looked like. And then go on with the story. You're on deck, all right, buddy.
All right. So I was really young when I first moved into the house, and it's in a part of Massachusetts, all the way close to New York. It's called Warren, Massachusetts, and you know, it's a nice place when you first move there. I mean, the house is really big. Looks small on the outside, but it's really big. When you first walk in, there's a parlor that we turned into our living room. And I'll tell you a little bit later about what happened in there on my dad's side and mom's side of things that happened in there. But off to the left-hand side was a kitchen and a door that goes downstairs into a basement. And if you could just go around the house in a big loop, it was just a huge dining room with a chandelier and a fireplace, a small little bedroom. And it was really old. It was built in like the 1850s, and it had all the old foundations and everything. It was really nice. But then the spooky stuff started happening when I got a little bit older and I was more aware. My first instance was in the kitchen that I was talking about.
Now, hold on. About how old were you when the things started happening that you were aware of?
I was about like 10 and a half, 11 when I was, like, more aware of it because I was, like, 9 years old when I first moved in. So I was young.
Okay.
Yeah. My first instance, I walked into the kitchen from school, and it was really quiet in the house, and I put my bag down, and I started making myself some food, and I watched my cabinet door open, and a plate just, like, pick itself up and just drop on the ground and smash, and then I heard my mom come running in, and I'm just standing there, like, completely jaw-dropped, like, what the heck? And that was my first experience. And then the house started to change, like, as the months went by. Like, me and my little brother didn't want to stay upstairs in our bedrooms all the time because we always felt like something was staring at us from the closet. So I would actually, like, creep around from my bed around where a support for the house was in the middle of our bedroom. And I would grab my little brother and run out of the bedroom. Like, I wouldn't even go near the closet. I would actually go up around the whole thing. It scared me that much. That was on the second floor. There's so many instances. Now, like I said, you can go around the whole house in a circle. My mom and dad's room was on the other side of the kitchen. Next to the bathroom, if you go into the kitchen, on the right-hand side is the master bathroom with a tub and a huge mirror. But as you go into the master bathroom and take another left, there's my parents' bedroom, and we called it the master bedroom. You could see the backyard out from their bedroom window, and that's where my parents' TV, like our whole house TV, would be in their bedroom. When things got more scary, that's where a lot of the story will come from, is in that bedroom. But our home phone was sitting on the right hand side by the TV, and me and my older brother were arguing about watching TV, and all of a sudden, after we stopped arguing, understand, the phone wasn't plugged in at this time. Like, our home phone was disconnected. It was old. And it recorded our whole argument and played it back at us. Like we're here. Like, now listen to yourselves argue. You sound stupid. And after that, it got crazy. It got really crazy after that. That's when we knew, like, things were really bad in the house. I got goosebumps all over my body. I'm sorry. That talking about this house, like, even freaked out my whole family every single time we talk about it.
Now, did you guys stay there, or did you move out, or what did you do to get rid of it?
We had to leave the house. We were in a contract for 4 years with the house. My parents were. So we had to stay there until the contract was up because my parents wanted to buy it for, like, our dream house, pretty much.
Boy, it sounds like a real dream, doesn't it?
More of a nightmare.
Get stuck where you can't move out. I mean, I've been in that situation, and there's nothing you can do. You just have to deal with it because you can't go anywhere.
To go in chronological order of all the stuff that happened, I can't, because my dad was staying up one night. Now, when I say walking into the house, this house was old, so walking in, you would actually have, like, a breezeway, but it's not a breezeway because there's a gun rack chamber on the right-hand side as you walk in, not even a mirror. It's, like, where you would store, like, your ammunition or something as a hunter out in the woods. as you walk in, there's another bathroom. So it'll be like a nook, like right on your right-hand side. On the other side is a bathroom, a small little bathroom with like only the toilet right there and then the sink, like not even a step away from you. Two steps away from that bathroom door was our couch with another TV that my dad ended up getting the longer we stayed there from a friend of ours who lived across the train tracks on the other side, which probably made the house even more active because of that constant railroad electricity passing through. But my dad sitting there on the couch or like love seat we had at the time, he saw a little boy chilling in the just there in the corner that runs
chilling.
Into my brother's
right?
bedroom. He was playing peekaboo, and he thought he was my dad thought he was me because this kid like literally looked exactly like me. And my dad will literally say, that literally looked like my son. And the little boy ran, and he could hear footsteps pattering away, running into my older brother's room, which was right next to the living room, which connected to my parents' bedroom. So, the whole layout of the house is just crazy, and the basement was even worse. The stories about the basement are just... The basement was huge, and if you go into the kitchen on the first floor and go down the stairs, there was a left side with just a whole bunch of empty space and this stone-blocked, like, dirt area with only, like, enough space where you could crawl in, which my dad had to go in and take asbestos out.
Oh, wow.
Now, yeah. Behind the stairs was this cement slab that connected to the wall, the door handle. And my dad and his friend, who is a truck driver, tried to open this thing up, tried to crowbar this thing. Me and all my brothers tried to open this door, and no avail, this door never opened. And I'll talk about that. I'll talk about a story about that door in a second. But around that was another huge garage area where my dad would work on stuff, like car stuff, because my dad's a mechanic. And if you go back, walk back towards the stairs, there's a door and then another set of barn doors, as if there was, like, horses down there at some point. It was, like, a stable-ish type area. And that's where we would put all our bikes. In every part of this house I'm telling you about, all of these parts were active almost all the time. The more I became aware of it, my sister and my mom would go down there and do laundry and would just like drop clean laundry and run back upstairs because they would hear voices and see faces.
Did any of them try to talk to you or your family?
We got a lot of growls. Nothing tried to contact us besides growling. And it wasn't safe there, really, because my dad found a gun and then human remains in that cobbled area I told you about. And there was a huge, like, investigation after that. Yeah, that stone door was open one night when I went down there. I can tell you that much. That part, I don't know why I woke up, but I ended up walking down there trying to grab glow sticks from my dad because my dad got glow sticks from 4th of July, and I found that door wide open, and it slammed in front of me, and I cried and ran upstairs.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you had, I mean, what a harrowing experience. How long, let me just ask a couple quick questions. How long, do your parents still own this house?
No, they don't.
How long did you live there?
4 years.
and it was 4 years of terror, correct?
For a lot of my memories scattered about it, because even though it's still long ago, I can put bits and pieces together. And I'm sorry I'm like all over the place about it, but that's like trying to put it all together in chronological order is just really difficult, because not only was I young, but after that, like, I've never really felt the same. And every single time I think about that house, my ego goes from big to almost like mouse size, because that place literally terrified me.
Well, now, I tell you what, can we, I would like for Robin, if she wouldn't mind, and Robin, I hadn't asked you about this, you know, this is not scripted, this is all real time. Would you mind telling us the story of the house you lived in that was so haunted? Would you mind sharing that with us?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
To begin with, just to back stuff a little bit, Jeremiah, what you had in there wasn't a regular spirit. It was demonic. And I don't toss that word around lightly, because there's a difference between a ghost and something demonic. Okay? They come from two different places. But whatever was in that house, I'm just telling you up front, that was demonic. It wasn't a regular ghost or regular haunting. Okay, that set aside, I've had contact with ghosts since I was very small. I can remember being a toddler and talking to them. So everywhere I go, they're there. I mean, I have ghosts in the house there right now. John knows that. He's been here. But this particular house, it was my first marriage, and my in-laws were trying to be gracious, and they were incredibly kind people. They bought this house to rent to us because we were new, we were young, we had two small children, and they thought, this way, if they get in financial problems or whatever, we're the one they're paying rent to, it's not going to be an issue, which was absolutely wonderful of them. However, we didn't have a say where this house was. We didn't have a say in what it looked like or anything about it. They went out, bought it, and said, okay, this is where you're living, like it or not. They were trying to be helpful, but yeah. So the second we pulled in the driveway to this house, I looked at my husband at the time, and I said, I can't live here, and my kids can't live here. Like, if you're going to be here, you're doing it on your own. And he says, why? And I said, there is evil in this house. Oh, no, it's fine. So anyway, we get moved into this house, and it started immediately. It started with, we had a very small kitchen. And my grandmother, God rest her soul, was always, you know, whatever's going to be easiest for you because you're a mom, you're so busy. And she went out and bought me this portable dishwasher because it didn't have a dishwasher in this house. This was eons ago. And I would load this dishwasher up at night, and I'd run the dishes in it before I went to bed. I would get up in the morning, and all the dishes would be dirty, even though I knew they had been washed the night before. And they would be all over the kitchen, and everything in the cupboards would be either on the floor, on the counter, the oven door would be open. There would be food dumped all over in the cupboards. I mean, it was just insane, absolutely insane. And it would take hours to clean it up. And the kids were afraid to go in the kitchen. They wouldn't have anything to do with it. The one was an infant. The other one was a toddler. And just strange things would happen. And I would get... And John knows this about me. I keep a quiet house other than my dogs barking. We're not loud, rowdy people. I don't have music blasting or anything like that. And I've always been that way. And I would get, my neighbor would call the police, and the police would come out and they'd say, you have to turn this music off. Now, mind you, I didn't even own a radio. No boombox, no CD player, nothing. And I'm like, what music are you talking about? Well, she said, there's this music coming out of your basement, and it just sounds evil, and it sounds like, you know, acid rock type music. And I would hear it now and then. I would. But I didn't know where it came from, because I knew it wasn't coming from me, and it wasn't coming from my husband. And I'm like, what is going on with this? And they kept saying, well, it's coming from your basement. But yet the police would come out, and there wouldn't be one noise. Nothing. I would get woke up in the middle of the night with this noise coming from the basement. The police would come out, and they could never find out what was going on. I told them, I said, you can search my house. I don't even have a radio. Like, I have nothing to play it on here. And it was just very bizarre. And the house was incredibly tiny. It was much too small for even a single person, let alone somebody with two children. And so my in-laws, being the kind people that they were, said, we're going to build you another room. And I said, how are you going to do that? Well, there was a stairway that went upstairs. And they were going to put a dormer out on that, but it was going to be really costly. And every time I'd open the stairwell, I would find dead bats on the stairs. And we would have someone, we had somebody come out to see where they were getting it at. Nobody could ever find out how these bats got in the house. But yet every bloody time I went upstairs, there was a dead bat laying right on the stairs. Nowhere else, just on the stairs. So they decided they're going to go downstairs into the basement, and they were going to put a subfloor in and build a room. And in the meantime, this kept going on with the dishes. And I would see things move through the room, and my toddler would look up at certain parts of the house and then just start screaming bloody murder and come running to get me. And then you would see nothing there. You could feel something bad was there, but you couldn't physically see it. So anyway, they're building this room, and they put a subfloor in right where the bedroom would be, and they'd put the framework for the walls. And the guys would leave their tools there every night. Never a problem. They'd come back the next day, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, to start to work. They come back one day, and they're just mad as can be. And I said, what is the matter? And they said, what did you do with all of our tools? And I said, I haven't even been downstairs. I haven't touched your tools. Well, all of our tools are gone. The only thing left down there is a screwdriver. And I said, then one of you guys must have taken them home, because I haven't been down there, and there's nobody at the house. My husband was a truck driver. He was gone for weeks on end. I was by myself. And I said, nobody has touched these tools. Well, we're not coming back to work to replace the tools. And I'm like, but I didn't take the tools. We looked high and low, couldn't find them. I mean, they just were not there. And a couple weeks later, my father-in-law came over, and he said, well, you know, I don't know what we're going to do, because now we have this subfloor in and wall, you know, framework, but nothing done. And he's like, we got to find these tools. And I don't know what brought it about, but somebody decided to pull up one of the boards on the floor. I can't remember why we did it. Pulled up that board, and all of these tools were inside the subfloor.
What?
To begin with, I swear to God, I'm not making this up. All these tools were in the subfloor. And I'm trying to remember exactly why we pulled it up. I think we did because the last thing we saw was these tools when they finished the floor, and they were all out around it. I went downstairs when they left and said goodbye to them, and all the tools were out, and the floor was done. It was solid. No flooring had been put on it other than the ply boards. And my father-in-law said, I don't know what else to do. You know, we're going to have to just forget it. If there's this many problems down here, that's what it was. We're going to take the whole thing down and just scrap it and go back to putting the dormer up and spend the extra money. He started to pull the plank boards up, and that's how we found the tools. Every one of them were down there. Now, there's no way. They're going to slide under there. It's a framed out solid subfloor. And that's exactly where they were. So we took it all down, got rid of everything.
Without using tools.
Yeah, we had to go buy a hammer because everything was under the floor. I mean, my father-in-law brought tools over there to pull it up, and when he went to go pull it up, that's how he found everything. Saws were under there. Yeah, it was just a hot mess. Boxes and nails, you name it. So then my kids had gotten, I bought rabbits for my two little kids for Easter. And in the wintertime, this is in Michigan, it gets cold outside. So I brought the bunnies in a hutch, and I had them downstairs in the basement. I'd go down and feed and water them every day. I go down there one day, the cage, and I had a lock on it because I didn't want anybody letting them out. And I went down there, and the cage was still locked, and both bunnies were out of the box, and they were laying in front of my washing machine side by side, completely dead.
Oh,
we couldn't find a hole in the hutch. Oh, it gets worse. Couldn't find a hole. That these rabbits, and I swear to God, this is all true. I could not find a hole in that hutch as how they got out. Even if they had got out, what are the chances they're going to go and lay side by side and say, okay, let's just die together? I mean, it was insane. So then we had everywhere I've ever lived, everybody drops off their strays.
You know how they died?
No idea. They were perfectly healthy, and then the next day they were dead. So everybody would drop off their strays. I would get dogs, I'd get cats, anything anybody didn't want, they'd dump it out in my yard. So I had all these cats. I brought them in. Again, it's wintertime in Michigan. I brought them in because they were cold. My son was still an infant, so I didn't want them running throughout the house at night because I didn't want them in the bed with him. And going downstairs, we had a door there. You would open the door, go down 3 steps. There was a landing, go down 8 steps, landing, and then 3 steps, and you were in the basement. So every night, before bed, I would go and I'd put extra cat food down there. They'd all come down there to eat, and I'd shut the door. That way the kids wouldn't, you know, they couldn't get in bed with the kids. I didn't mind another child because he was in a regular bed, but the baby, I didn't want a cat in with him. So we get up the next morning, and my husband happened to be in town, and he's in the shower. And I got up, I went into the kitchen like I do every morning to open that door to let the cats come up. And one of the cats we had was a black cat. I opened this door. I will never forget this till the day I die. And, I mean, it takes a lot to scare me. If you knew the basis of my life with the paranormal, it takes a lot to scare me. I screamed like I have never screamed in my life. Laying down on the first landing was this black cat. It had been cut up in little pieces. There was not one drop of blood. We never found blood anywhere. But it was laid out like a puzzle piece. Like the head was in the appropriate spot. The ears had been removed, and they were sitting above the head, but there was like a gap about an inch from the skull to the ears. Then it had the body. The tail was detached. That was about an inch or so off the back of the rear end where it should be, but not detached. The legs were laid out as they were supposed to as well. Not one drop of blood. Never found any blood. It was just all dissected in all these pieces. And it was laying there for me to find. I mean, it was literally laying where when I looked down the stairways, it was in the right position to just lay there for me to see. I remember screaming, and my husband was in the shower. He heard me, and he came out just as I hit the floor because I passed out. I remember coming to and going, "What? This has got to be wrong." I was stuttering and stammering. I couldn't even imagine. And he's like, he was freaked out. He's like, "I've never seen anything like this in my life. Like, I can't even comprehend that we're looking at what we're looking at." And so he was all freaked out. I ended up going and getting the body parts and, you know, bagging it up and everything. Checked on all the other cats. They were okay. Never found any hair where there was a struggle and the hair had fallen out. Never found any blood. It was like a perfect puzzle. And I looked at him and I said, "Either you get us out of this house or I will, because these kids are not staying here with me." And so he called his dad, and he's like, "We can't stay here anymore." And his dad's like, "Well, we've got to sell the house first. You can't just up and leave." And it was a big family issue. And I kept saying, "You do not understand how bad this is. Like, you really are not understanding the gravity of the situation." So Halloween comes along.
I would have taken a freaking picture.
You know, back then, there wasn't. If I would have had a cell phone or a camera there, I probably would have. But I didn't really have a camera, and they didn't have cell phones yet. So now it's Halloween time, and I'm getting my kids, and by then we'd had another child. So I had two little ones that were getting ready for trick-or-treating, plus another infant. And we had our front porch. It was like a 5x5 porch on it, and then there were steps that went down in front of the windows in the dining room. So if you're going to the front door, it's no way for you to get to the front door without clearly being seen through the dining room. So I heard my son, my oldest boy, playing in the living room. And I was in the kitchen getting snacks and stuff to put in the diaper bag for everybody while we went trick-or-treating. I come out, and my son is standing in front of the front door. He's inside, but he's at the front of the front door. And he's got his head tilted up, and he's talking to this thing. And I look over in this. It had a head of a human on it, and the body didn't look right, but it was coming through the door. It was a ghost, and it was up high, and it was gleaming through the door and looking down at him, and it was telling him, "All you have to do is open the door, and we're going to go get a bunch of candy. It's going to be, you know, be fun. Let's go. Let's do this." And the door opened. The door literally opened by itself, and my son is standing there just like this bizarre look on his face like he was tranced by it. I come out of that kitchen like a bat out of hell, and I just hurled myself on the door and slammed the door. And when I did, it just like it sucked it right out the door and it was gone. I looked out that window. There was nothing out there. But I saw it. My son saw it. So at that point, I'm now trying to find another house to rent, whatever, to get the hell out of there. Because there was no way I was staying there. Well, in the middle of
absolutely
all this, my boys started acting really bizarre. They were taking all their clothes, all their toys, everything, their blankets, everything, and they would go and get the one bedroom window. There's two bedroom, windows, and they would open the one. It was always that same window, and they would throw everything they owned out this window. And I thought, this is the most bizarre behavior I've ever seen. And yet, this was constant. I would go get everything in the window, they'd toss it back out. I'd get everything back in, they'd toss it back out. I'd lock the windows, and whatever, for whatever reason, and those kids weren't big enough to be able to unlock those windows, but the window would be unlocked, it'd be up, and everything would go right back out again. And I didn't find out until right before we moved, because we bought a different house and moved. I was talking to the next door neighbor, who was a very nice lady, and I was telling her, I said, this house, and I, up until then, I hadn't told anybody except my family what was going on there. And I said, I'm telling you, this house is possessed. I mean, there's something evil in this house. And she said, well, you know, she said, there was a murder in that house. And she said, the guy killed his family, but he used to beat the hell out of these kids. And the window that your kids are throwing the toys and stuff out of? And I said, yeah. She said, his kids every night would try to run away, and they'd throw all of their blankets and their toys and their clothes and everything out that window trying to get away from them. And he'd catch them and drag them back in and beat the hell out of them again. And he eventually killed the kids. And I'm like, and yet nobody bothered to tell us this or even mention it. The neighbor never mentioned it beforehand.
Oh, my God. And,
I mean, it was horrific. You have no idea. It was just awful, and it was terrifying. Things would come up missing. Things would move across the room. The lights would go on and off. I mean, it was constantly something going on in that house. I never felt safe. Not for one single second of one day did I ever feel safe. I was terrified for my kids the whole time.
I remember very well about the blue and white house was I never felt safe there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've had other houses, you know, that have, I mean, every house I've ever lived in, there's been spirits that have showed up. And, you know, my kids are used to it. My one daughter was so funny because this is like back in, 2013, and it was, it wasn't solstice. I can't remember what day it was. But anyway, I'm laying in bed, and it was real active that night anyway. And apparently my daughter, she was laying on her bed. She was watching TV, and she looked over, and there were four people standing by the next to the bed talking to her. And she at that time, she couldn't hear them yet. And they were talking, and she looked at him, and she says, if you want somebody to hear you, go across the hall. That's where my mom's at. So they just dissipated. She came running in the room, Mom. And she was like 12. I said, what's the matter? And she said, Mom, these people were standing next to the bed talking to me, and I couldn't hear them, but she said I could see through them, you know. And I said, oh, it was Beltane. That's what it was. So I said, well, you come in, and you can sleep with me. So she climbed in bed with me, and we're sitting there. We literally, the two of us, watched this floating head go by. But there was never anything bad. I mean, we never had any issues with it. I mean, everybody was good. And when I lived at this one house, and that was, you know, Paranormal Alley, I had the Bigfoot there, and they walked around constantly. Everybody saw them that was there. But we were forever, you know, seeing them float across the yard. I was laying in bed one day, and I was watching TV. It was like 11 o'clock at night. And I looked over, and there's a little girl. And we've seen this little girl walk through the house before several times. And I looked over, and there's this little girl on my bed kneeling with her hands like to pray. And she had the cutest little old-fashioned nightgown on, and it was a ruffle at the cuff, right at the collar. And then it had a ruffle that went down around her chest. And she looked like she was about 4 or 5 years old, just praying. You know, and we got her on an EVP where she was talking about the cat. She liked the cat we had. So the cat was pretty. So she, could she come play with the cat? And I said, yeah. And she said her mommy had died. Could she call me mommy? Because she didn't have a mommy anymore. And I said, yeah, you can. But we had a researcher that came out to do some research on the Bigfoot. And he did EVP readings on her. And then he saw something else floating across the yard, too. I mean, it's just been in every house I've ever been in. Although I've not had anything as dramatic as that. The only other bad entity that I've ever had in my house was not there when we moved in. I don't know what brought it there. And we had always, you know, I'd get orbs in my house and spirits in my house. And it's not a big deal. I'm used to it. But my daughter walked into my room one night, and I looked at her, and this thing had tried to take possession of her. And she was 4 at the time. And I looked at her, and instead of seeing her, I saw this old shriveled up woman, like this old hag of a woman. And she was, she took over my daughter, like even the physical appearance. And I turned around and I saw that, and I instantly knew what had happened. And I jumped up, and the thing took off, and it just bolted. And when it did, my daughter just fell to the ground. And this spirit thing went through my kitchen and went up the stairs and into my daughter's bedroom and shut the door. So I got my daughter, got her taken care of, laid her down in my bed, and went up there. And I couldn't even get in the door. I couldn't get the door unlocked. And after that, it was like something demonic was there. I mean, there's evil. There's a difference between, you know, evil and demonic. There really is. This, whatever was in there was just pure evil. It was awful. And I even reached out to the Catholic Church, because my mom's Catholic, and she had got me some holy oil and stuff, and they said if it got bad enough, they would come out. But they were even nervous about coming out. So I put holy oil on the kids and did it all through the house and that, and I sent my kids to my mom's for the night. And I went upstairs. At that time, I didn't know what I know now. And so I went up there. I was the only one in the house. I just started quoting things from the Bible. And the more I would quote things from the Bible, the more violent it would get in my house. And I knew it. And so I went upstairs, and I couldn't get this door open. And I fought with it and fought. Finally opened it, and things were flying out of my daughter's closet, just across the room, flying out of it. So I walked in the room, and I just kept doing what I was doing with the Bible. And I went through and I put holy oil around her room, and I had hung up a bunch of crosses and stuff. And this thing slammed the door to her room, so I was stuck in the room and I couldn't get out of it. And I didn't say anything, but like John said, I mind speak. I've done it my whole life. So I got the impression that it wanted my daughter. That was the whole purpose. It wanted my daughter. And that's why it set up camp in her bedroom. And I said, you can't have her. That will never happen. I will never let you have her. And this went on and off for I don't know how long, so I just didn't even pay attention to the time. I just sat there, and the doors were slamming on the closet, and things were flying around the room. And it finally just all went quiet. And when it went all quiet, I started doing a prayer that my grandmother, it was an important prayer to her. And I used to say it all, it was just the Lord's Prayer. And I just kept saying it over and over and over and over. And I had this holy oil, and I would go through and I'd redo the doorways, and I'd put it all on the walls over every door frame and everything. And it finally just went quiet, and we never had any more issues after that. Still had spirits, I mean, which was fine. Anything well-intended is always welcome at my house. And when my father passed, we would see my dad walking around. But I didn't have anything else bad. You know, and it's just every house we've been to has, I mean, I don't ask them to come. They just kind of show up. It's like when John's been here, we have a little girl, and John's had contact with a little girl that's been here.
Yes, I have. And here's what happened. And then once I tell this story, I want to turn this back over to Jeremiah, because he's got some cool stories that will actually be about. So here's what happened. So everyone is sitting in the living room, and it was, and I'll go ahead and say it was Janice Carter, her daughter, Holly. It was you. It was your husband. It was me. And it was Zach Somov, the Russian artist, and it was Igor Burtsev. So all of us were sitting. Everyone in that house was sitting in there in the living room, and I heard something running up the stairs. And so I jumped and ran up there, you know, and I saw nothing, but I kept hearing, you know, because you have the standard stairway from the first floor to the second floor. And I heard, and I ran and I heard it. And then I came back, and I think either you or Janice Carter just laughed and said, yeah, that's just the little girl's there. And it was frightening.
Yeah.
I heard it.
Night Jan was ever here, I told her, you know, because she's used to the foots and all that stuff and all the paranormal stuff. So I knew it wasn't going to throw her for a loop. So I told her, I said, listen, there is a ghost around here. We have a small child. We also have an older man that's quite tall. You know, don't be afraid. They're not going to hurt any hearing. She's like, okay. So she's laying in bed in the room that she was in, because I have four bedrooms upstairs as well as mine downstairs. And the room she was in was directly across from the bathroom. And she's laying there, and she's watching the bathroom door open and close, open and close. Most of the night, you know, and she just took it in stride. You know, I mean, there's nothing you're going to be able to do. But, yeah, I mean, it's common knowledge. And the older gentleman, Pat and I were talking one day about, we wondered what his name was. And he, about 2 days later, he was in the shower, and he comes out and he said, apparently the gentleman's name is such and such. And I said, what? He said, yeah, I was taking a shower when he dropped in for a visit. I'm like, okay.
Well, that's incredible. Now, all right, now, Jeremiah. You've had some stories kind of like this, and if you don't mind sharing those with us, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And by the way, while you were talking, Robin, my volume went from 80% just right down to zero. Now, you didn't, I'm serious. It just did. And that's why, you know, you didn't hear me for a couple seconds because I had to like pull the volume up. So
yeah.
Anyway, Jeremiah, start talking because you've got some great stories that might, you know, just be along the lines of what Robin had.
I do a lot of urban exploring. I kind of stopped a while ago, but I don't know if you guys know much about New York, but New York is quite the country area of New York is quite active. Me and a Job Corps friend of mine, because I used to go to Job Corps for welding, he invited me to go up and stay with him at his apartment and meet his family and just hang out for a vacation we had. And I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? So I go up and hang out, and we end up going bar hopping for the night. And we end up going up the street because he was like, oh, I know this cool place. We can, you know, and hang out. And I'm like, all right, that sounds cool.
Sure.
So I'm we go up and we see this house off on the side. And he was like, I've never seen this. You want to go check it out? And I'm like, oh, absolutely. I want to go. So we go inside the house, and it has a little porch up in the front, and you can instantly go directly in, and it's just wide open, and a staircase on the left-hand side that goes up to a couple rooms upstairs. It's real simple. Now let me tell you, there's nothing in this house. There's no chairs. There's no graffiti. There's nothing in the cabinets, in the kitchen, no plates. Nothing. Go into living room, nothing. Just a fireplace in the corner that you can kind of see when you first walk into the house, with a window that goes to the woods out back, and go up the stairs, nothing. There's no holes in the walls. There's no beds. The windows are all still in contact. It's just like it's there, just stood in time, like, whoever was there literally cleaned up the house and was just like gone, like not living.
Oh, wow. Anymore.
Yeah. So we go downstairs, and at this point it's winter time. So we started getting cold, and I don't scare easy because this only happened like 3 years ago. Like, I'm pretty strong-willed at this point, where I've been in a fair amount of scary situations because I put myself in them. there's this little girl standing in the corner right by the fireplace. And homeless people up there staying in a house is kind of normal. So we just thought it was a homeless girl. So we were like, hey, you know, are you okay? No reaction, nothing. So I creep a little closer. My friend's behind me just a little bit. He's like, nah, something's not right. I'm like, dude, it's just a girl. Like you could see, like, you couldn't see through her. Like, just full body, like, literally.
Oh, wow.
There. Like, you could see hair. You could see the long shirt she was wearing with the black pants, just really,
yeah,
long hair. But she must have been like 15 or something. We never saw her face, but I creep a little closer, and it's like, I'm not joking, when it's like somebody, like something huge clapped the house, shook the foundation, and this chick started screaming, and all of a sudden these gurgled growls just started all over the place. I literally froze. I was paralyzed in fear. Like, my friend literally had to pick me up and carry me out while plates, chairs were being kicked across the room. Now, I told you the house was empty. Like,
yeah.
All of this stuff started hearing, like, from the void, just, like, all across. Windows started breaking, and this continued, and my friend just sat there as we got off the grounds and we're standing by the street. Like, I'm just shaking. I'm just like, oh, my God. He's like, dude, where is all this stuff coming from? Like, we saw, like, plates flying through the windows, breaking windows, and we were just standing there as, like, these screams just came out of this house that was just quiet. We were just stood there in shock. We were just like, oh, where did this come from?
Where, like, was this house located at?
Out of nowhere. Huh?
Where was it located at? Is this, like, a subdivision or out in the country, or...?
We were bar hopping, and then we went to his house, and then he's like, yo, you want to go to this place I've been before? And
oh,
I'm like,
okay.
Yeah. And, like, we just took off, and we were only on the street for, like, 45 minutes. But, yeah, I don't know where we were, but he's like, I've never seen this house before, and it's just, like, appeared.
That's bizarre.
Well, things do happen like that. I mean,
oh,
you know,
drove off like 2 seconds after, like 2 seconds after standing there, like taking all in what just happened, and we both just looked at each other and ran to the car, and he turned the car around and took off the other way. We sat at a gas station, and he had tears. Now, my friend is 24 years old at the time. He had tears in his eyes. He was like, dude, I don't know what just happened. Like, we were both shaking, like, trying to, like, put together pieces of, like, really just what happened to us. Like, when I tell you, like, something clapped that house, like, imagine an earthquake, but all in this one location, just at once. Like, it felt like something stomped on the foundation and made the whole place shake.
When you heard the growl, how high up in the air did the growl come from? I mean, did you see the direction it came from or hear it?
There was no basement.
And no,
it sounded like it was coming from underneath us. Like, it sounded like it was just there. Like, imagine just, like, it, like, in your face, just there.
Oh, I can imagine that, yeah.
Like, it sounded like it was everywhere all at the same time. And when stuff was being kicked, like, my friend had picked me up, but, like, he literally, like, threw me over his shoulder. And I was watching a chair go flying right by him as he ran out the door. Like, it just appeared. There's a chair. Like, even to this day, I scratch my head thinking about it.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean,
like,
I believe it completely. This is wild.
Oh, yeah. Like I've been in haunt. Like, I've been to Spider Gates. Me and my ex-girlfriend in Massachusetts, we stayed at Spider Gates Cemetery. That was,
oh, wow.
That was terrifying. We stayed in the sixth gate. Then we ended up sleeping out in the truck at that night. That went horribly wrong. Yeah, I've been places. Norwich. I don't know if you guys
now,
have
what
ever
about
heard
Norwich?
Of Norwich.
No, tell us about it. I know the name.
Norwich State Penitentiary. I think that's where my Exeter Job Corps grounds were. Hold on. I don't remember exactly, unless that was a different place. I can't remember the place I went to. One of my friends, it was a big group of my friends. We went to this penitentiary, and I don't think it was. I think it was, but I'm just going to check real quick so I'm not lying. Norwich.
This is absolutely, ladies and gentlemen, this is not scripted. We are telling stories, and this is important.
Yeah.
We're doing stories. This is reality, and We're glad to have you here on the one and only ScaryCast. All right. All right, Jeremiah, what have you found out?
This was Norwich State Hospital in Connecticut, and you can't get on this place unless you are literally breaking the law. it's the grounds are absolutely massive, and it's on an island pretty much. But when you go there, I think, yeah, when you go there, you have to climb underneath like a bridge to get there. And so you don't get caught.
How pleasant. Jeremiah, how
we
totally pleasant,
to
right?
Get there. Yeah. But we were there and we stayed there for only a few hours. And as you walk in, now my friend, I'm not going to give out his name or anything, but my friend has been there a lot. And she knows the grounds very well. And as we're walking through, now this was my very first time going there. He's like, be careful, no cameras, no flashlights. And as he's saying this, upstairs you hear, dum. And he's like, that's a door right there. He's like, just no lights, do not scream. You're not going to get hurt. He's like, you just got to be very, very quiet. So the girls that were there actually, like, really did, like, keep their mouths shut. It was quite surprising, but we were walking up to one of the doors that you go in to go downstairs, and the door literally closes right in front of us, and Mike shoves his foot in the door, and he goes, you're not locking up us up here because we cannot get down. You can't do that. And the door opens back up. And he's like, that's what I thought. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, it's kind of scary. But, like, at the same time, I was surprised. Like, I just held my mouth open. And I was just like, oh, my gosh. Like, wow. He's like, when the guards aren't really around, you can do the flashlight test, but you don't have to touch the flashlight at all. Like, you can literally hear the flashlight click on and off. It's really active. Like, I've seen him do it once, and it was just me, him, and his girlfriend at the time, and it was, like, 1:30 in the morning. And he's like, yo, this is what I was talking about. And he sets up the flashlight, and he walks all the way down. And he left his phone right there, and he's like, turn on the flashlight. And on his phone, you hear of the flashlight turning on. Like, not turning it and to loosen it so it's easier for it to use. It just literally click, click, and the flashlight was on.
That's crazy.
Okay. Well, that just sounds wonderful. I mean, it sounds like the most you could ever have is going to be hanging out and experiencing ghosts. So I tell you what, this has been great. And first of all, I want to thank both of you for your stories. It's been incredible. And I want to say, Robin, would you, of course, you're one of our co-hosts. But would you like to come back and tell more of your stories?
Of course.
Jeremiah, would you come back and tell us some of your stories?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know that I am setting something up, right? That's
yes.
I am setting something up because the three of us, this has been the most fun that I've had in many, many months on ScaryCast. So what I would like to do in about maybe 5 to 6 weeks, I would like to rekindle this group. And let's talk about our stories, because we've got a lot of stories. And by the way, I haven't even gotten to share mine, so I'll wait for those 5 or 6.
Yeah,
weeks.
I want to hear one of yours. Stop holding back.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Robin, are
I
you
am.
Ready? Jeremiah, I hadn't
I'm
asked
ready.
You yet. So, Robin, are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, Jeremiah, now you can talk. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
Okay. Whenever I go to Lakemont, Georgia, that is every time I go there, I have a paranormal experience, and it's always a Bigfoot experience. In my book, Look Up in the Sky, I talk about the bump in the night when something hit the cabin that I used to stay in, or I still stay in, and there was something going on here, and it was a Bigfoot. But what happened was the next day, and I'm standing there talking on the phone with, of course, Robin. And I'm standing there on the left, if you could envision this, the left side of the road. And I see something running through the woods, but it's invisible. But it's breaking limbs and leaves and everything. And I hear it. And I was on with Robin talking about it. And just like, it was unbelievable. And Robin said, oh, they're just saying hello to you. And that was the most incredible thing in the world, because I realized that was Bigfoot saying hi. Because let me ask you something. I'm going to ask this to Jeremiah. Jeremiah, if someone is 12 feet tall and weighs 2,000 pounds, if they want to come walking, Jeremiah, if they want to come walking up to you and shake your hand, wouldn't that scare you to death? Wouldn't you? You'd probably have a heart attack, right?
Wouldn't have a heart attack. That'd be like the mom feeding you Miracle-Gro, dude, and you're like, you're huge.
I mean, you'd be absolutely.
You'd do it, Jeremiah.
You'd
be
petrified.
Shocked, man. I wouldn't be scared. I'd be shocked.
I'd be like,
you're a big man.
Sorry, I would just be scared to death. And I think they knew it. So so here's what happened.
But if I
I'm
was
standing
scared,
there,
your question, you would say, how would I introduce myself?
Well, they already know you, so. Oh, come on. I don't think you understand. I don't think you get the deal. So you're standing there, and all of a sudden, something incredible happens, and it petrifies you. It would. So what happened was 2 days ago on Thursday, I decided I went to my friend's house to wish him a happy birthday and all that. And I took, and then I said, I'm going to walk up and I'm going to take some pictures of this place where I had this incredible experience. So I go up and I take some pictures and I take my phone down. And all of a sudden, I hear this loud noise. I see something about 4 feet tall, about 2 feet wide, just collapse about 50 feet from me. And it was scary. It was loud. I said, well.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, again, if you're 10 feet tall, and you weigh a couple thousand pounds, I mean, how else are you going to say hello without scaring someone to death?
Yeah.
And then it was
so
really
that they know you're there.
Exactly. And then I went down into Clayton, Georgia, where I run the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and I mentioned what happened. And the remark was, oh, well, you know, because it's raining, you know, things drop off trees. But something
not
doesn't
that big.
Something that big doesn't drop off 40 or 50 feet above you and all that, and it was frightening. And I realized when it happened, that was like, hello, John, how are you? So
that
yeah,
scared the crap out of me for sure.
It's,
oh, they love him. They love John.
but thank you. Thank you. I mean, I was absolutely petrified when that loud noise hit. I didn't know what to say. But yeah. Yeah, that's what goes on at Lakemont, Georgia. And we are not allowed, and we are not allowed to tell anyone exactly where it happens, because I know
exactly.
That if we did, we would, you know, there would be a million people up there. But every time
yeah.
that I go up to Lakemont, they always let me know that they're there and they say hello. But it was terrifying, and it's weird. It's like every type of Bigfoot experience that I have, it's terrifying. But then I realize that they're just saying hello. Because I mean, listen, you're that big. How else are you going to say hello and not scare someone to death? So anyway, well, I'll tell you what, we have had a lot of
John,
fun tonight.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Do you also believe in the rake and stuff like that?
I think the rake, myself, I'm not going to say I don't believe in the rake. I think it's something, but I'm not sure they have it set as to what it is.
I have never seen the rake. So now you got Robin and I both.
I was just wondering.
So, I mean, is there a thing as a rake? A lot of people say yes. I think people generalize it because they don't know what it is. But I think a lot of times anything that they see that they don't know what it is, they say, oh, it's a rake. And I see a lot of people that will post all these pictures of these crazy things, and I'm like, that's not a rake. It's a whatever it happens to be. And I'm like, I just get to the point where I think I do believe that they exist. I'm not going to say they don't, because I never say never. I've seen too many of these crazy things, so I don't believe for a second that it's not possible. I know it's possible that there's one. But I think that people use that as a generalization. When they can't find out what anything is, they're like, oh, it's a rake. Let it be tall and thin and it's a rake. And I'm like, not really. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, does that at least – I'll tell you what, you asked me and I said, I'm not sure. And Robin gave her take on it. So is that okay?
Yeah, no, that's okay.
I mean, there's a lot of things out there. You know, rakes tend to not be good, and that's okay because there's a lot of good things out there. There's a lot of bad things out there, you know.
Well, as the paranormal, isn't that what we try to go after, though?
Yeah, it is. It is. But the thing is with the paranormal, it's fine to go after these things, but you have to really use your head when you do it, because not all things need to be gone after. I had a very dear friend of mine who loved going after the paranormal stuff. He was heavy into anything paranormal. He's now dead because he went into a haunted house that I told him was not just haunted, that it was evil, and he wouldn't listen, and he assured me he would be okay, and the spirit there killed him. So you have to, it's fine to investigate these things. There's nothing wrong with that. That's how you learn. But you have to have some common sense, because when things are that violent, when they're that bad, there's a reason they're that bad. You know,
absolutely.
And you have to learn how far you can push it and how far do you go before it just gets to the point that now you're just being careless, reckless, and somebody's going to get hurt. So you have to kind of pace yourself. I mean, you got to, and I mean, I'm not an expert. I don't claim to be an expert.
You have to see the signs too, because they will lure you back.
Well, they will. Absolutely, they will. And the problem is all of these things, anything paranormal, the cryptids, the ETs, dimensionals, elementals, you name it, whatever these things are out there, they all have paranormal abilities. They have such a leg up on us, it's not even funny, and they're capable of anything. They literally can, if they want you dead, they can. All they have to do is think about you enough, and they can stop your heart in a heartbeat. I mean, they can zap you. All of them can zap you. And when they go to zap you, it's like you're being electrocuted and you're done. And they can pick you opposed to somebody else. I've had people next to me get zapped and put on the ground, and I never got anything. And it has nothing to do with it being me. I mean, my day will come, I'm sure. I knock on wood, you know, that I haven't yet, but that doesn't mean I can't. You know, and they can put it where they want it. And all of these things can do it. And especially when you get all these, you know, these ET factions that are in and out of there, and Rake being one of them, you don't know what capabilities each one has because we don't know enough about them. So you just have to be careful. You know, like, yes, I do research, but as far as that kind of stuff, I don't go looking for trouble. It finds me. I mean, I don't have to go looking for it. They show up. And as, throughout the course of my life, I deal with them as I come. You know, I mean, it just seems to be certain people are magnets for it, as John knows.
Oh, my goodness. And just so that everyone knows, my fraternity name was Trouble. But we're good.
So you and I get along so good.
Yeah, it must be. All I got to say is thank you to both of you. We had a wonderful scary cast tonight.
Oh, it's great.
We will repeat this again in a couple of weeks. And Jeremiah, thank you very much for being here.
Jeremiah, it was wonderful to meet you.
Anytime.
I enjoyed hearing about everything.
It's wonderful.
And Robin, of course, it was wonderful to have you here. So we will
back at ya.
We will close our scary cast tonight. We'll be back next week. And thank you to everybody.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.